Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Litch. Signals, Wednesday, 8 p.m. and time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling. Right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Mary Edgerton, and alongside our whole Storyland village, because you know it takes a village, our co-hosts Greg Audell, Warren Holloman, and Hank Rubicek, our engineer Nicole Rochelin, and our intern Tatiana Gago. And finally, our assistant Teddy Puig is away for the holiday. But thinking of him and all of us, we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers who take us on excursions through enchanted worlds and through windows of their souls with personal stories that stretch the boundaries of the human heart. There are so many treats to be had by listening to this program. And as hosts, some of those treats come when new storytellers are discovered. Tonight, we have one of those discoveries, an up-and-coming author, Demez White. Demez is a native Houstonian. He works as a freelance journalist and writer. He published his first novel, Walking Down the Aisle, in 2011, followed by a series of short stories entitled Conversations with Adults. And yeah, we will talk about that a little later. Finally, this was interwoven with a collection of love letters. And I have to tell you, letters are one of my favorite genres, so I'm hoping we can mention something about those a little later. His new novel is called Learning to Enjoy What Happens in the Middle. So, Demez, I've been looking at the title of your book, and I am not middle-aged. I'm past that. So, what happens in the middle, and it's the middle of what? Of life or love or romance? Like, can I still be in the middle?
Well, thank you for having me. Learning to happen what happens in the middle, it is all of the above. It is love, romance, life. And to answer your question, there is no age gap. There is no, you can be 19, you can be 99.
Oh, thank you. I fit well between those two.
And that's pretty much what the book is about. It's about me talking about life, my stories, my journey. I'm a romantic. I believe in romance. And I believe that love kind of defines big moments in our life. And I use this book to talk about those moments and to talk about my growth as an individual and my growth as a man.
So I just want to say I did go to Demez White's website. We'll talk about his website a little later. And he is a romantic, and that's one of the first things I said to him when I met him is I've seen the conversations with adults, and I've seen all the women saying, and men, okay, all the people saying, hey, when's the sequel coming out? But I've also read the descriptions of the love letters, which are his own love letters. And I said, Demez, are you a romantic? And he said, yeah, I think I am. So here we are. We're on the verge of celebrating my favorite holiday, Thanksgiving, because we give thanks and we meet with family, and I'm a foodie. It's all about food, and there's not that tension of, oh my gosh, did I get them the right thing, you know?
Yeah.
And there's no religious overtones. So does your book talk at all about just being thankful for the moment?
Of course. That's a big theme in the book. Honesty, communication, being thankful for the important people in your life and the important moments you make. And I also speak about certain moments that happened that made me thankful that for the people in my life. And I'm also going to tell one of those stories later on from the book that talks about an adventure of sorts that I had in Belize and Cuba, where it was a time where, you know, I could have lost somebody and it made me grateful for them. So I'm thankful for that, and I'm thankful for those moments.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. So are you ready for story number one?
I am ready for story number one.
So am I, and I think our listeners are too.
Okay, so story number one. As we all know, Hurricane Harvey recently happened. And Hurricane Harvey, let me start from the beginning, of course. I am a project manager, and I work, and sometimes I get put on call. So that Saturday, it was raining a little bit. We didn't know how bad it was going to be. So they called everybody into the office and wanted us to stay on call. You know, I kissed my girlfriend goodbye. I kissed my family goodbye. I told everybody I would see you tomorrow. Didn't really think anything of it. Well, of course, as Saturday started to escalate, it went from raining a little bit to raining a little bit to eventually the city started to be underwater. At this moment, it was me and four other guys. Four other guys from very different nationalities. You had one guy that was Hispanic, one guy that was Somalian. I myself from African American from Houston. You had another guy that was European. And we're all sitting in this building as it starts to be surrounded by water. And to give you all a visual, I go to the back door in a parking lot that almost never floods. You might see a puddle here, a puddle there. I go to the back door, I open a parking lot, and I can't see the parking lot. And all of these guys now, they're looking at me because I am the senior leadership. And I never looked at myself that way. I always looked at myself like somebody that was one of the guys or somebody that was up and coming. But in this moment, all of our supervisors, they were gone. So I'm in charge now. And as I look around, I'm nervous. I'm not nervous for myself. I'm nervous because one of the guys has family. They're trapped. Their situation is getting worse. I can tell he's worried. He's not eating. He's stressing. He's calling every 5 minutes trying to get somebody to save him. Another guy has family that he can't get in touch with. His wife was supposed to be on a plane back to Houston. The flight got canceled. His children are with his sister in Dallas. So he basically has his family scattered all over this country. And he doesn't know what to do. The third guy, his mom passed away. None of us knew this, but he was supposed to be on a flight the next day to get to Dubai for his mother's funeral, and he was trapped. And as we're all sitting here in this building, trapped, our nerves are getting the best of us. And at that time, you know what I did? I found a can of chili. I found some leftover hamburger meat, and we threw it all in a crock pot, and we sit down and had dinner together. As the world is coming down around us, as the flooding is happening, as we don't know if people are safe or if they're flooded in, we sit down and we ate a meal together and we laughed and we talked about life. And I learned stuff about these guys that I would never have known had this flood not happened. And I was so concerned about them that I didn't want them to see me worry. But throughout the night, when I'm by myself and the lights are off and it's just me, I found myself texting my girlfriend and worrying about her. Worrying about if she was safe, worrying about if, you know, she was going to be all right, worried about her family, worried about my family. And I knew they were all worried about me because they were somewhere where it was dry. They weren't surrounded by water. They weren't trapped per se. And in those moments, I remember feeling grateful. I remember feeling grateful for having known her. I remember feeling thankful for the family I did have that was so concerned about me. And as the days went by, the water never went down. Day after day, I remember waking up in the morning and opening that back door, hoping just not to see rain falling anymore. And rain still fell. And with every hour and every inch, I just felt this nervousness. Like, I used to love rain. I used to love sitting on my porch and telling stories and enjoying conversation and having a drink and listening to the raindrops on my windowsill. And now this rain was terrifying to me. Now this rain had my heart beating. Now this rain made me anxious and nervous. And when the rain finally stopped, when it was finally room for us to breathe, I remember getting in the truck and driving to these railroad tracks because the bridge was flooded. So I drove to the railroad tracks, climbed the fence, went over the railroad track to a parking lot, and that was my girlfriend and her sisters waiting for me. They brought me some food. And they were like, "Here, we brought enough for you and all the guys." And we hugged. And, you know, she wanted me to leave with her. Then she didn't want to leave herself. But in that moment, I realized this is what matters. Like, the book means something to me. But it means something to me because the stories in the book are stories that come from my heart and my real life.
Oh, that was beautiful. You know, I think all of us have to remember from time to time what's really important in life, and that's you and your loved ones and our safety and our health. And even when we lose a loved one, the fact that we had them and their memory. So So you bring something out in me. I work diagnosing cancer in people. And there are times I'm like, oh my gosh, I have an ex-husband who acts like a sperm donor and I'm not the best driver. I have to take my car and be fixed again. And I stop and I remember, you know, I'm diagnosing cancer in women who are younger than me, my age, just older than me and beyond. You know what? I'm fine. My kids are fine. And if something happens to them, at least I know about the disease and I can counsel them and keep us on a straight ground. So you stop and you remember, really, what's important in life? I think I'm doing well and I'm thankful. And I think that's what you're describing with. You're describing that with this flood coming on, you realize...
You don't complain about the small things anymore, or at least, you know, it's funny. About a week after the flood, I remember thinking to myself, I was at Raising Cane's and I said, why is the line so long? I don't have time to be waiting for this chicken. I'm ready to go eat. I got to get back home. And I stopped myself like a week ago. I was eating noodles and happy to have water. And now complaining about the line at a fast food place.
Right.
So it helps you, you know, right. Think about what you're complaining about. Think about what you're doing. And that's pretty much what happened. You know, like sometimes I find myself just struggling with the parking spot out there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, during Harvey, there was no parking at all. So
right.
Just park and be happy.
Right. Just take a breath. Take a breath. So, Demez, tell us a little bit more about the book and learning to enjoy what happens in the middle.
Okay, about the book. So, the book is basically standalone chapters. Every chapter represents a different portion of my life. You can basically pick up any place you want in the book, and you can read about an experience I've had. I talk a lot about dating and learning how to become a man. And what I mean by that is, I've always been very personable. I've always been very professional, but that doesn't always equate to doing things the right way. So learning to enjoy what happens in the middle is about learning to realize what you want to do in life. And what I want to do in life is be a writer. I want to be a good writer, but I also want to be a good man. And I tell stories about meeting my father for the first time and talking to him and listening to his experiences and realizing that, you know what, we're not that different. And instead of harboring resentment or hate, you know what I can do? I can learn from this moment and I can learn to enjoy this moment. I can learn to enjoy life. And that's pretty much what the book is. It's my relationships. It's my friendships. It's my upbringing. And it's learning to embrace everything that went wrong, because the stuff that went wrong eventually made me appreciate what was going right.
That's a very brave statement. So did you meet your father at what age did you meet your father?
The first time I met my father, I was a child. And let me clarify. I met my father when I was a child, but the first time I met him as an adult and we were able to have a real conversation. When I met him as a child, I thought as a child, I was shy. I was nervous. I didn't really ask him the questions I wanted to ask him or talk to him the way I wanted to talk to him. But when I became a man and I was able to sit across from him and just talk to him without any resentment. Talk to him as if I'm talking to you. And just say, hey, tell me about your life. Tell me about what got you to the point you were at. And I want to know. I want to know so I can not go there myself. And I also want to know because one day I'm going to have kids. And I want my kids to know about their grandfather. And that means something to me. It means something to me to know where I came from. And it also means something to me to show myself that I can forgive and I can enjoy life.
That's very powerful. And maybe some of y'all have heard me tell that joke about my ex-husband, whom I refer to as my sperm donor. But I tell my kids, listen, that's your father. Don't ever make a decision that you're ever going to regret about him. He's not my father. He's your father. That's a very different relationship. So you write from true human experiences. So you just told us about the Harvey experience. So are all the stories in the book from your life, or do they reflect other people's lives?
That's a good question. All but three of the stories in the book are from my life. So I have three fictional stories in the actual book. One of them I'm actually going to read some of. But the three fictional stories I have, they're basically anecdotes, you know, parables, whatever you want to call them. And I use them to sort of give you a point of, yeah, you know, you might get tired of hearing my voice. But these stories are like basically little mini novels in the middle of my book. And I talk about meeting a woman, enjoying spending time with her, and then messing that up and wanting to get her back again. At which point it's too late. You should have tried harder. And that's pretty much the story that I want to read some of, which is, you know, don't wait until they're gone to fight for them.
All right. So I'm going to do one station announcement. You're here listening to Demez White, our guest and an author, telling us stories about life. We're here on So What's Your Story? This Wednesday night at 8 p.m., as you've heard us many other nights, right here on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville, not to mention KPFT.org live streaming from anywhere in the universe where you can get internet. I'm your host, Mary Edgerton, and Demez White is my guest. So why don't we go to another story here?
Okay. This story is called Don't Wait Until They're Gone to Fight for Them. It is from Learning to Enjoy What Happens in the Middle. Have you ever been sitting at work, looking at the clock, willing 4 p.m. to turn to 4:30 p.m., and it seemed like it took forever? That's the same feeling your woman has, sitting around waiting on you to realize that she needs you to fight for her just as much as she's fighting for you. I can't tell you the amount of men that I didn't know even were in a relationship that I've seen randomly posting pictures of their woman giving them these amazing, short story-like descriptions only after they've messed up or pushed her to the point where she doesn't even want to hear it. Give people their flowers while they're living isn't just for funerals. It's for relationships, probably more so because our significant others give us so many chances to give them the smallest reason to stay. This chapter isn't so much about the how you can make someone stay, how you can have told her how Marty's story would end up. She would have called them a liar and bet them a six-pack no man would ever end up having her cry. So, Marty sit in the bookstore with his backpack at his feet, wondering how many books he'd paid $20 a pop for, and he couldn't even get back $3 in change. His best friend was getting married in Barcelona, and even though Marty had just went to Bolivia for a week-long getaway, he knew he couldn't miss the wedding. So he borrowed, begged, and pleaded with everyone from his parents and creditors until he had enough. It was an amazing wedding, and he had no regrets. No regrets until he got home and his lights were off because he forgot to pay the bill. No regrets until he got his direct deposit from work and it was short a couple hundred because he's run out of vacation days a month before the trip. Now, here he was sitting in a bookstore trying to find any way he could to get some money, swearing he wasn't going to get on another plane this year. Unlike most people, Samantha took pride in returning books she didn't like. She was well aware that the bookstore had a policy that books can be returned after 72 hours, but she'd fought them on it before, and she would fight them on it again. After 100 pages, she realized the author was giving them the same story he gave them in the last book in a different tone. As soon as the clerk saw Samantha, he took the book out of her hand and told her to go pick out whatever book she wanted. Checking her favorite section, she saw that a new book she wanted was sold out, and waiting a day for Amazon to get it to her wasn't something she was willing to do. Marty sat at the table, checking his email for the 18th time in an hour, hoping that someone accidentally sent him a check for $32,000. Seeing that wasn't the case, he held his face to his hand, wondering what in the world he was going to do. The moment she saw him, she felt self-conscious. Her hand went to her head and uncombed hair, and she realized she was wearing a baseball cap. At least her jeans and t-shirt had seen better days, but it was cool for your clothes to be faded and wrinkled nowadays, according to her little sister, at least that's what she told herself. It was a feeling she couldn't remember ever feeling before, and it made her not like him, even though he was the cause of her feeling it. Marty forgot about his impending homelessness and unemployment and the fact that all he'd eaten in the past 24 hours was a bag of chips and a sandwich. She was beautiful, and not the type where she'd worked on it for a couple hours before coming out the house. She was naturally perfect in every sense of the word, and though he was used to women approaching him, she felt different. "Are you going to buy that book on your table?" Marty looked down at the book she was referencing and smiled at the idea that he must have had the best luck in the world. "Actually, I was. She's one of my favorite authors." Samantha looked down at the book to make sure it was right and laughed. Normally, she would have found a guy lying before he even knew her name annoying, but for some reason she found it cute in him. "I don't meet a lot of men that read her work. Her last novel on aliens and why we should love them is hilarious." She threw in a fake laugh and reached to pick up the book off the table. He pulled it away before she could grab it and looked her in her eyes. "It's not a her. It's a he. And I'm not sure what book you're reading if you saw something about aliens. I went to high school with her brother, and I shot his headshots for the back of his book." He scanned some pages and set the book down on the table. Now Samantha's smile was genuine, and she sat down at the table, unable to hold in her excitement about him knowing one of her favorite writers. Asking him 1,000 questions, he happily answered, and before they knew it, the staff was starting to cut the lights off. "This book was just sitting here. Let me buy it for you." He wasn't sure why the words came out of his mouth, knowing all he had in his pocket was $25. But he said the words, and there was no turning back now. "Only if you let me buy you a late dinner." Marty reminded Samantha of a part of herself she'd been denying. The part of her that liked conversation and the smell of a man in her presence. She wasn't ready to go back to her quiet apartment, where on most nights the only people that spoke to her were her friends and their never-ending group chat. And Netflix asking her, "Are you still there?" She could sense the stress in his shoulders, and she noticed how heavy the backpack was when he picked it up, even though he said he'd only been there for a book. Marty was funny, flaky, smart, silly, charming, and handsome. Samantha wasn't sure what that combination would lead to, but the moment he held her hand as they walked towards the parking garage, she knew it was leading somewhere. That's the first part. That's the honeymoon phase.
There's always a honeymoon phase.
Marty and Samantha, this is the real life phase. "Marty, it's almost midnight. Where are you going exactly?" Marty was putting on his jacket and trying to look for his keys in the dark with very little success. Had he known cutting on his cell phone flashlight would wake her up, he would have just taken an Uber. "I told you, my friend is getting in from Amsterdam tonight and they need a ride from the airport. I told them I would pick them up a while back, and I just forgot about it." Samantha watched him look for the keys, knowing she put them in between the couch cushions downstairs. "How did you tell me you were picking someone up from the airport at midnight when you say in the same breath you forgot you had to pick them up yourself? That literally makes no sense, Marty. And if it's nothing, why are you sneaking out? Why wouldn't you just take me up and tell me that you're about to leave?" Marty could tell from her voice that she was wide awake now. So he cut on a light in the room, and it took just a second for her to adjust her eyes. The moment he cut on the light, he knew he'd messed up. What he loved about Samantha was that she loved every inch of him. Eventually, he'd gotten around to telling her about his financial troubles and bad decisions, and she never judged him. Even got some part-time work with him for people she knew to get him out of debt. What he was starting to despise about Samantha was how she loved every inch of him, because it meant she never stopped staring, noticing every detail. If he bought a new shirt or a new pair of shoes, she noticed. If he started to eat something different or watch something new on television, she noticed. So when he cut on the light and he was wearing a nice pair of jeans, a t-shirt that fit him well, and a new leather jacket she'd gotten him for his birthday, her look could have killed him. So let me get this straight, Marty. You wake up in the middle of the night after you damn near force-feed me that sleeping pill, even though I told you they make me druggy. You trim your beard and decide to get dressed up, all to go pick someone up from the airport at midnight that I've never heard of? Do I have fool stamped on my forehead? Throwing one of the pillows at her, she sat up, and he leaned against the door. I don't have time for your insecure stuff today. I already don't go out anymore, and I don't talk to this person on Facebook or that person on Instagram. Please, I don't have the time or energy to deal with another woman. I didn't wake you up because I know you haven't been able to sleep and you need the rest. At this point, Samantha knew she couldn't hold it in any longer. Her mom, her friends, countless people told her. If you go looking for something, you'll find it. She wasn't like any of them, though. She couldn't live a lie. Not after all she sacrificed for him. Not after letting him move in after 3 months. Not after the arguments and drained her peace of mind. She needed to know he was worth it. And if that meant becoming a woman she promised herself she would never become, it's just what she had to do. You're sloppy, Marty, and you're cheap. For all of your $30 haircuts and $2 jeans, you couldn't pay for the extra storage place on iCloud? You had to back your phone up on my computer? A phone that's on my plan? A part of it feels like you were wanting me to catch you. He wanted to ask her what she was talking about, or tell her that she was wrong for being nosy, but Samantha was probably the smartest woman he'd ever met. And even though he wasn't sure if his heart was in their relationship anymore, he wouldn't have sought her intelligence. I wasn't expecting you and I to become what we became. And I wasn't expecting for her to come back to the States. She told me she was never coming back. And a month ago, she found out she was coming back. And one thing led to another and we started talking. Why do men lie even when they know they were caught? Is a lie better than a whole lie? They weren't questions she wanted answers to at this very moment, but they were questions she wanted to ask. She couldn't see the text, but the frequency of them let her know whoever he was texting was important, especially since he was responding to them almost immediately, but would take a half an hour at times to respond to her. The straw that broke the camel's back wasn't the text, but the pictures. The pictures he'd either been too dumb or too caught up to delete or simply not save. They were innocent enough, but over the weeks she could see them progressing, and each one broke her heart more and more, but she couldn't stop looking. He was literally sharing his days, his thoughts, his life with this woman, and all she got was emojis and attitude. Even with all of that, even with the lies and the disrespect and the disappointments, she wasn't ready to walk away. Don't leave tonight, Marty. Take off your jacket. Get back into bed. We have to talk. Don't leave tonight. The irony almost made her choke. How many times has she gave the "I would never let a man do me like this" speech to so-and-so to her friends? And now she was the woman asking her man to stay after he'd broken their trust. All I'm going to do is pick up a friend from the airport. I need you to trust me. Getting out the bed, she walked to him and gripped both sides of his jacket. She didn't want to cry, but how could she stop it? He didn't want to see her cry, but he knew it was either her happiness or his. I can't do this anymore, Samantha. I have to go. Her pride wanted to curse him out, wanted to grab the lamp or the paperweight or a heel and bash him over the head. Her anger wanted to make him feel what she was feeling, but her heart was in control. I gave you all of me. I gave every single inch of me, and this is what I get in return? You don't do someone like this that has only ever loved you. Tell me before you go to that woman. Tell me what it is I did to deserve being dragged and drugged and walked out at 1 a.m. Marty felt the pain in her voice, but he had no answers for her. Your keys are in the couch cushions downstairs. I won't be here the next couple days. Please get whatever is yours in that time. If not, I'll throw it in the trash. Get out of my house. She couldn't stop the tears, but she would at least save herself the embarrassment of breaking down in front of him. Hearing the door shut and his car pull off, she put her head into the pillow and screamed as if she'd just been shot.
Wow. Okay. I don't even want to begin to talk about the memories that that brings up.
Oh, sorry about that.
No, don't be sorry. But it evoked so many feelings in me of things that I had felt with men who hid things. My husband, then husband, who hid things from me. That was outstanding. You really evoked both personalities so well, both, you know, from the man's point of view and from the woman's point of view. That was really great. So that is from Learning to Live in the Middle?
This is from Learning to Enjoy What Happens in the Middle. And like I said, I wanted to put in parables, little mini novels inside of the book to go along with my stories, because oftentimes I feel like people can relate to things best when they see it from a fictional perspective.
Okay, so that one doesn't come from real life?
I
saw that smile.
I'll have to plead the fifth on that one. There are some moments, of course, avenues of my life that go into these fictional stories, things that I probably didn't want to talk about on a first-person level, so I did a little bit of my ghostwriting and put them in the words of someone else, but they are relatable, and they're relatable for a reason, because oftentimes reality is a lot stronger than fiction.
People do strange things. People do strange things. And even when they're in love, they do strange things. So I just want to remind everybody that in the last month, so we're going to go back to some program announcements, and then we'll get back to talking to Demez again. We had asked many people to donate to keep storytelling alive, and indeed we had many donors. I want to thank one of my listeners, Carrie Wiles. I saw her last month. She's been following the show from out of state, and she donated to our cause. So thank you, Carrie. Stories not only connect the storyteller to the people close to us, but they also reach beyond borders and connect us as members of the human race. Hey, so back there, Tatiana, can you tell us about some storytelling connections in our community? What's coming up?
Yes, Mary. Okay, so first, let's start with the Houston Storytellers Guild, because it's the best group to work with to start cultivating your storytelling talent. Just to get their monthly story swaps held on the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel at 1500 Sunset. Go to their website, www.houstonstorytellers.org. for upcoming events and all our past So What's Your Story programs. Every show since 2008 listed on the menu under radio program. And if you don't have a radio, it's no excuse for missing our show, because you can listen to us a stream live on KPFT.org and Facebook Live. Tell us what you think about our shows or suggest program ideas for visiting our So What's Your Story Facebook page, and we promise to get back to you. And please be sure to share our page with friends. And we love it if you like us when you leave. Check out our program clips on YouTube, and don't miss our friends at The Moth at Warehouse Live. Usually it is held the second Tuesday of the month, but in December, it will be on December 19th, and the theme is dirt.
Hey, that was great. And guys, you're hearing from Tatiana Gago. Usually it's Nicole in the back, but Nicole's doing our live streaming here on Facebook, and Tatiana's handling the boards. So, Tatiana, what's up for next week at So What's Your Story? I think it's going to be Greg Audell, but I don't think we know who his guest is at this point.
I am completely lost right now. I don't know.
Okay. Well, you know, we often have a surprise moment, and actually, Demez, I think I was able to get connected with you just this weekend. So that was very exciting. So we'll find out. And Hank, I think, left to go to the airport. I just want to mention he hosted Donna Ingham at Hickory Hollow Barbecue last week, and he hopes to have Donna back in town. So we're about to head into our next story from Demez White. I just want to remind everybody that you're listening to KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville. I'm your host, Mary Edgerton. Demez White is my guest. He's an author here in Houston. Now, you mentioned in your last story that, or talking about your story, that you've been a ghostwriter before entering the world of being a novelist. So tell us about your experiences as a ghostwriter.
Being a ghostwriter is really cool because I get to make people's dreams come to life. So if you come to me and say, I have all these amazing stories about my life and I want to put them into a novel, but I don't really know where to start, we're going to sit down, we're going to have a conversation, we're going to talk, we're going to email back and forth, and I'm going to take those stories that you have, I'm going to take those memories or whatever it is you want to talk about, and I'm going to put it into a novel for you. And once I do all of that work, once I put it into a novel, once you proofread it and tell me this is what you like and what you don't like, I'm going to finish it up, I'm going to give it back to you, and you're going to put on the front of that, it's your book.
You know, when I read about ghostwriters, I always wonder if you feel like you're missing out on something. The book becomes a big hit. Do you feel as though, I should have gotten credit for that?
It's a scary feeling, but at the end of the day, would I have had the content if they hadn't given it to me? So that's the best way for me to look at it. I've written books for people, and I've signed contracts that says, you know, I can't talk about them per se. But I've written books for people, and the books went on to do better than my books. And it is a feeling where you're like, those are my words. He's sitting up there reading my words. But I go back through the emails, and he sent me these words. I just formatted them and put them into a space where it was much more readable. So that's the way I look at it. I don't really take it as they're my words, even though I do have my moments of, he can't even write.
Okay. I can go with that. Okay. I can go with that. That was a great explanation. So tell us what you're going to tell us about next. We're going to get into story number three.
We're going to get into story number three. And story number three is about my trip to Cuba.
I've been to Cuba, so we'll talk about that afterwards.
Okay. Now, to be perfectly upfront, I only stayed in Cuba for about 20 minutes, but I'm going to tell you all why in the story.
Ready? Go for it.
Okay, so I like flight deals. I love flight deals. I feel like there's no other way to fly. And what happens with flight deals oftentimes is you have to leave at different times. So I go to Miami. My girl gets on a flight to go to Miami about an hour, 2 hours after me. So we weren't flying together. Well, if you've ever been to Cuba, what you have to understand is you're pretty much always going to fly from Miami. So we left Houston. We go to Miami. I'm flying out of Miami. She's flying out of Fort Lauderdale. So she goes to Fort Lauderdale. It's about an hour away from Miami, 45 minutes with no traffic. And she goes to Fort Lauderdale. I'm in Miami. We're talking on the phone. She's like, I can't wait to see you there. I don't speak Spanish. So she's doing all the translating. She speaks Spanish. Well, when I get to Cuba, I open up my phone and I get a text from her saying that they're shooting up the airport. They're shooting up the airport. I'm trying to call, I'm trying to text her. But Cuba has no cellular network because, of course, they were just opened up. So my AT&T phone that I'm paying $150 a month for is a glorified paperweight right now. So I have to use my roaming. So I cut the roaming going. My mom texts me. I'm trying to get in touch with my woman. AT&T sends me a text. We're cutting off your service right now. Now, I can't even really respond because they literally cut my service off. So I'm reading through the text they sent me. And basically, because I stayed on my phone for about 3 minutes, my bill was $800. Now, mind you, I've never used roaming before, so I didn't really realize how it works. But that's how it works for anybody out there listening. You use roaming in another country, in about 3 to 5 minutes, your bill is going to be $1,000. So they cut my phone off. So now I'm at the airport in Cuba. I have no phone. There's no Wi-Fi in the airport. I just got a text when I got off the plane saying that my girlfriend was hiding in a corner. They were trampling people. They were shooting. My mom is texting me. She's worried. She's like, is everybody okay? Are you okay? And I'm sitting here like, what am I going to do? So I don't speak Spanish. So I'm walking around basically looking for people that look like they might speak English. And I finally see a couple. And the couple was from Australia. And I walked up to them and just flat out told them, I need you all's help. Do you all speak Spanish? They were like, a little bit. So I told them my situation. And they were like, oh, okay, they do have Wi-Fi here. I was like, where? I can't find it anywhere. They was like, it's like in one corner of the airport. I was like, one corner? They were like, yes, cigar shop upstairs. And there's about a space about the size of a closet. And you have to kind of be close to that space and you can get you some Wi-Fi. So I run upstairs. And I hold my phone, trying to find an angle. And I still can't call or text, but I can get emails now. So I'm emailing people, trying to see what's going on. And I find out from my cousin, who's a flight attendant, that there's one flight left to get out of Cuba. So I tell her, I say, I need the flight. So I go up there to the front desk. And there's about 20 people in front of me. They're all trying to get back home because the airport in Fort Lauderdale is closed down and the only one left is Miami. As I'm sitting there, I'm looking at these people like, I'm not going to make it home tonight. I'm not going to make it back to America. I don't speak Spanish. I don't even know the reservations to our Airbnb. I'm going to be sleeping on the floor in the airport tonight. And when I tell you that the most amazing thing happened, which I can't tell you is even good or bad because I don't like to have good things happen to me at the expense of other people. everybody in front of me was traveling as a family. You had a couple here. You had a couple with kids here. You had friends here. You had a girls trip here. So all 20 of those people were together and none of them wanted to leave each other. So by the time I got up there, they were like, we don't have any more seats. I said, it's just me. Oh, well, you're in luck. We have one seat left. And I'm literally like, I'll take it. I don't care how much it costs. I don't care anything. I just need to get back to the States. And I got on that plane. And as I'm on the plane waiting to come home, I realized I didn't even have my luggage anymore. I took it off the plane with me to go into Cuba. I didn't pick it back up to leave. So I left my luggage there. And I thought to myself, I took off work. I paid this money, got these hotel rooms, Airbnbs, and I came to Cuba for 20 minutes. And as I'm leaving, I'm saying it's worth it. She's going to be okay. And when I get off the plane, I had to take a bus from Miami to Fort Lauderdale. And I took the bus and I'm going and I still can't call anybody, right? Because my phone is still cut off. And I finally get to a payphone. And when I tell you, in 2000, this was early 2017. If I tell you that in 2017, do you know how hard it is to find a payphone? I walked into a couple stores. They were like, we don't have phones. And I finally found a payphone. And I didn't know anybody's number. I'm literally like, I called the one number I knew and asked them to look up numbers for me. And when I got to finally see her, and I saw her and my cousin, and they were both looking like really tired and really stressed. And they were more worried about me and my adventure than what she had just went through. And in that moment, I'm like, you know what? This is pretty cool. And this goes back to what I was telling you earlier about being thankful. I was so upset about having to wait, my plane not leaving on time, my luggage, this, that, this. But when you go through something like that, all of that stuff seems so irrelevant. And you just become grateful for having someone alive and in your life. And that's how I spent 20 minutes in Cuba. And I'm not sure I'm going to go back.
Well, that is an amazing story. And I remember that Fort Lauderdale event. And so I went to Cuba in November of 2016 for a meeting. My trip was very different from yours, although I had to go via Mexico. And I, on the way back, missed my connection in Cancun and had to spend the night in Cancun. And the friend I was traveling with was very sick, had had food poisoning. I've got a stomach of iron. We ate the same thing. I come through, I'm fine. And he was very ill, but we managed to get our flights changed and find a hotel in Cancun. Everybody says, oh, you were stuck in Cancun. It's like, it's not a lot of fun to be stuck in Cancun from 11 o'clock at night till 10 o'clock the next morning, really. And we got back. And then I went back. I actually went back for the weekend that Trump was inaugurated. I felt this need to be out of the country. I know I'm not supposed to say too much politically, but Hank's not here. I had bought tickets to see Barack Obama inaugurated, first African-American president. So I'd bought tickets thinking I would see the first woman inaugurated. And when that didn't happen, I said, I'm going to be out of the country. I think I'm going to go back to Cuba. And I went via Fort Lauderdale, but without those events. And I will also say, if you don't speak Spanish, it's a little hard to get around Havana.
A little hard.
Yeah. Oh, this has been really exciting. I've really enjoyed this. I do want to make sure that we talk a little bit about your website, because I want to know, let people, our listeners, know how to get your books. So tell us about your website, how to get to it.
My website is www.demezw.com. There aren't too many Demezes that I've heard of. So if you type in Demez White in your search engines, my website will probably come up. But that's www.demezw.com. I love the website. Of course, you can get my novel on there. You can get my other writings on there. But you can also go there if you just want to read and get to know me. Because I feel like, as a writer and a storyteller, a big part of what I do is bringing people in. And you can go there and read some snippets of some things. And I'm pretty comfortable in saying that you'll like it and you'll want to get the book.
Actually, guys, I went there to get to know Demez after I got his name. And it is a great website. And his books are available there and also at Amazon. Mm-hmm. And you have a few t-shirts, like coldest writer on earth. Is that an extension of coolest writer on earth?
Okay, it's, it's coldest writer ever. And coldest writer ever is paying homage to one of my favorite writers called Sister Soldier. She wrote a book called Coldest Winter Ever that's really popular in certain genres and cultures. And I felt like, you know what? I want to pay homage to the writers that came before me. So I kind of took that from her, and that's where it comes from.
Oh, that's wonderful. So I have to ask you, where did your love of writing come from? When did you know you wanted to be a writer? Did this just start early on or come to you later? When was that light bulb moment?
Well, my grandmother, she didn't like me playing outside of my street. So I could only go from this one neighbor's house to the other neighbor's house. That's all I could ride my bike at. And she would almost, you know, if you want to do something, I'll take you to the library. So I would go and I would sit and I would read books. And in the summertime, she would drop me off at like 9 o'clock in the morning. And I would sit there all morning and just read books. And when I got to high school, I was a little shy at times. So the way that I interacted with people sometimes was I wrote books about them. So I would take these 70-page notebook tablets, and I would write front and back, and I would make up entire stories about people I was in classes with, some of my teachers, and they would pass it around like it was a little burn book. And I realized, hey, this is pretty comfortable. I like doing this. And that's pretty much when I started writing. I would write those tablets and just go front to back all day and night, and I would bring them to school and let people read them.
Do you journal? So this is like writing, story writing. But do you also journal about your own life?
I do. That's where this all started from, as far as the website. The website started as a blog. It started as a blog and me just writing my thoughts. And I would write thoughts about my life and I would talk about my life. And as I started to get publishing offers, I realized that I need to turn the website into a functioning website where I can sell merchandise and talk about my events. But it started as simply a way for me to not be posting, you know, those 5-paragraph posts on Facebooks, you know, where people would be like, I'm not reading all this on Facebook. And somebody suggested start a blog. So I just started themezw.com, and that led to the website. But it all started with me sitting up at 2 o'clock in the morning talking about the President Obama inauguration, or talking about heartbreak, or talking about wanting to actually do this one day. Like wanting to sit down and talk about a book. And that was my version of journaling.
So time's moving along. We have one more moment for one more little short story. And I just say that because I love your storytelling.
Okay. That's a good point you brought up, because my books in general, well, this book in particular, all of them are standalone stories. So this right here is from chapter 3. It is entitled, Never Stop Being the Man She Fell in Love With.
God, I wish my husband had read that. ex-husband.
I used to write poetry. I don't say this to brag, because my poetry was bad. It was 3 a.m. I've had too much to drink. Let me try and rhyme and text messages bad. I didn't write it because I loved poetry or I was in love. I wrote it because I thought it separated me from other men. I mean, how many guys are out there writing poetry?
Okay, Demez, my ex-husband wrote poetry. Oh. Watch how close you hit to home. Keep going.
During my bad poetry phase, I quickly realized women hate guys that are pretending. I happened to be pretending to be this guy that was poetic and deep, but it can be you pretending to have a better job than you have, or pretending to be a tough guy when you aren't. Pretending gets you nowhere, and it's especially embarrassing when you get caught being a fraud, and then you have to sit there and either keep pretending or admit it. It's much easier to be yourself. And if she likes the original version of who you are, it's key to you being the same guy. No man is exempt from feeling depressed at times, from feeling like you aren't where you want to be in life. And oftentimes we take our frustrations on those closest to us, which is the most cases are women. The cool thing is, if she sees you haven't given up on yourself and just needs some encouragement, she won't give up on you. All she needs is to know that you're still the man she fell in love with. I'm in my mid-30s, But this applies to wherever you are in life when she meets you. I met my little headache at a meeting at work. She was there, throwing out ideas, being the life of the room, and I was sitting in the corner taking it all in. She was in front of the camera and I was a writer. The thing I remember most about that meeting and the moment was how bad her ideas were. But I loved the fact that she believed in them. And by the end of the meeting, she had me feeling like maybe they could work. As our relationship progressed, there were moments where I saw her taking a step back from that woman that I initially met. And a big part of that was on me. I just wasn't being supportive because I was going through my own issues. Once I sat down and stopped being so selfish, I was able to talk to her and let her know it's okay. We all go through periods where it seems as though we aren't making the progress we should be making. That's the guy she needed me to be. The guy that she saw her working and building and wanted that for her. Not the guy that was so caught up in what I wanted to do that I had her focusing on me and my screw-ups instead of her own glow-up.
You know, you really write wonderful from a very mature male point of view, a man who's really comfortable with himself. And we have a little bit of time left. I mean, I want to bring in all these things. Oh, my God. My ex-husband wrote poetry for me. And then when he was dating other women, I found the poetry on his computer written for other women, which he denied it that he had written, which goes back to your your second story that you read.
And then I have a question on that. Did you find that any of the poems that he had written you were the same poems he had given to the other women?
Well, what's interesting, they weren't. But when he confessed he was having affairs and said that he wanted to get back together, he claimed that he just took the poems he wrote for me and just wrote her name in them. And to make it seem like he never wrote anything for another woman but me. And then I found the opposite, Nicole. I found that he was writing new poems for them, and that just didn't go down well with me. But we have about 2 more minutes. How does a man become a mature man? I haven't met many mature men, and maybe that's my fault.
Oh, okay.
But you just strike me as a mature man who's able to see the woman's side, the man's side, who understands the need for everybody to preserve their self-esteem but help other people. How did you get there?
I had a lot of good mentors in life. I had a lot of my grandfather, some uncles, some cousins. Even the females in my life, you know, my mom and my aunts and some women that I wasn't very nice to. You know, when I was younger, I wasn't very nice and I had done some things. But what really made me see a different side of things is when I mistreated people and I thought that the relationships were beyond repair and they were able to still accept me as a friend. And that sort of made me take a look at myself and say, what are you doing? Like, I don't want to be the guy that's 55 and still out here chasing the next hot thing. I don't want to be a guy that's 45 and it's out here, you know, blocking people on Facebook. You know, I want to be the guy who, after people talk to me, they can say he was a good guy and not 20 years from now say, yeah, that's the guy that like wrote me when we took a picture. I don't want that in my life.
That is a great statement to hear. A really, really wonderful statement to hear. So, we're getting close to the end. Do you want to say goodnight to somebody in Radio Land? This is my signature sign-off, is to allow my guests to say goodnight to somebody special in Radio Land.
Okay. Actually, before I came here, that was an argument that I had, and I was wrong. And if you're listening, I was wrong. I really am sorry. So, if you're listening in Radio Land, I need you to know that. And I also need you to read my book, because once you read the book, you won't think about me being a jerk. You'll just think about the good stuff I say in the book.
Actually, I have to say, through the hour, I really like this guy. If I wasn't seeing somebody, I'd ask you about your brothers.
Oh, God. I hope your boo not listening.
Okay. Well, everybody out there, this has been a really wonderful hour. I think I mentioned at the moment, it's a new treat when you meet somebody new who's a storyteller, who, you know, just is someone who comes out from a different set of circles where you find your storytellers, and who is so great, so much from the heart, at times so raw, at times mixing that fiction and truth in such wonderful ways. The story about Harvey, the story about Samantha and Marty, and then, you know, on to your own stories. Demez, thank you for making this evening with us. Everybody go out to DEMEZW.com. You can get the book or search Demez White on Amazon, and you can get the book. Now, for now this moment, don't move, because Wild Bill and Vinyl Avenger are ready in the wings to share their cool classics with you. Hey, everybody out there. Make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, maybe you're traveling for Thanksgiving, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And treasure what you hear. Keep loving these great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Mary Edgerton, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, and our guest, Demez White here, we never want you to forget that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
When you purchase the latest TV, tablet, or smartphone, don't forget to do the right thing with your old ones. Recycle them. The Consumer Technology Association and its members are making recycling your old devices as easy as buying new ones. Just go to greenergadgets.org, type in your zip code, and you'll instantly find the recycling location closest to your home. You'll also find recycling tips, like asking the store where you buy your new TV if they'll haul away your old one. Don't let your old tech tools clog your local landfill. Just visit greenergadgets.org. KPFT Houston.
Forested land around our bayous act as the kidneys of the water system. They clean out pollutants and help manage flooding in times of high rainfall. Preventing more Houston land from being covered in concrete ensures that more of the precious little water that falls has the ability to soak into the ground and our aquifers. Living with water shortages or damaging floods brings to light how connected we all are to the natural world around us. Our health suffers without clean water and fresh air. Families suffer without safe places to spend time together outdoors. Bayou Land Conservancy, a local nonprofit organization celebrating its 20th anniversary, works to permanently protect